1 Samuel, chapter 1. Now there was a certain man of Rothaim, Zophim, of the mountains of Ephraim, and his son was Elkanah, the son of Joham, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zeph, an Ephraimite. And he had two wives, and the name of one was Hannah, and the name of the other was Peniah. Peniah had children, but Hannah had no children. This man went up to his city yearly to worship and sacrifice to the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni, and Phinehas, the priests of the Lord, were there. And whenever the time came for Elkanah to make an offering, he would give portions to Peniah, his wife, and to all of her sons and daughters. But to Hannah he would give a double portion, for he loved Hannah, although the Lord had closed her womb. And her rival also provoked her severely to make her miserable, because the Lord had closed her womb. So it was year by year, when she went up to the house of the Lord, that she provoked her. Therefore she wept and did not eat. Then Elkanah, her husband, said to her, "Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? Why is your heart grieved? Am I not better to you than 10 sons?" So Hannah arose after they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh. Now Eli the priest was sitting at the seat in the doorpost of the tabernacle of the Lord. And she was in bitterness of soul and prayed to the Lord and wept in anguish. And then she made a vow and said, "O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your hand, maidservant, and remember and not forget your maidservant, and not give your maidservant a male child, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall come upon his head." And it happened, as she continued praying before the Lord, that Eli watched her mouth. Now Hannah spoke in her heart, only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard, and therefore Eli thought she was drunk. So Eli said to her, "How long will you be drunk? Put your wine away from you." But Hannah answered, "No, my lord, I am a woman of sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor intoxicating drink, but have poured out my soul before the Lord. Do not consider your maidservant a wicked woman, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief I have spoken unto you now." And then Eli answered and said, "Go in peace, and God of Israel grant your petition which you have asked him." And she said, "Let your maidservant find favor in your sight." So the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. When they rose in the morning and worshiped before the Lord and returned and came to the house of Ramah, the Elkanah knew Hannah his wife, and the Lord remembered her. So it came to pass in the process of time that Hannah conceived and bore a son and called his name Samuel, saying, "Because I have asked for him from the Lord." Now the man Elkanah and all his house went to the offer to the Lord in yearly sacrifice and his vow, but Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, "Not until the child is weaned, then I will take him, that he may appear before the Lord and remain there forever." So Elkanah, her husband, said to her, "Do what seems best to you. Wait until you have weaned him. Only let the Lord establish his word." Then the woman stayed and nursed her son while she had weaned him. Now when she had weaned him, she took him up with her, with three bulls, one ephah of flour, and a skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord in Shiloh. And the child was young. Then they slaughtered a bull, brought the child to Eli, and said, "O my lord, as your soul lives, my lord, I am the woman who stood by you here praying to the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord has granted me my petition, which I ask of him. Therefore I also have lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he shall be lent to the Lord." So they worship the Lord there.
We recently found our way out of the book of Judges. And that particular book, if you were around for that, illustrated around 300, 350 years of a nation that was a complete mess, both politically and, more importantly, spiritually. It was a mess. And as we enter into the book of 1 Samuel, this kind of overlaps a little bit with the end of the book of Judges. This is around the time of Samson. Although at one point in time, hundreds of years ago, Israel was united under Joshua as their leader, since then things had fallen very far from any kind of unification. And so throughout the book of Judges, we saw God send these individuals, these leaders, these judges to kind of deliver Israel as they were wayward from God and kind of try to reunite them. But if you remember the book of Judges, there was a particular theme that worked its way through the entire book, and it's this. We read it in Judges 21:25. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Everyone was just kind of doing their own thing. And that statement was both descriptive of where they were, but also leading into what the future would be here, beginning with the book of 1 Samuel, because now a king would be provided for that purpose of unification. So 1 Samuel is a transitional book. It's moving from when Israel was kind of this loose group of the tribes, but now towards a more centralized government. Now God is going to use this man, this prophet Samuel, to manage the spiritual needs of that nation. How important it is to have somebody with the spiritual needs in mind at the head of any organization. Yet, as usual, we're going to find that the people are quite reluctant to submit to the spiritual direction of the Lord through this man, Samuel. And if Judges was the book of no kings, 1 Samuel was really the book of a king chosen by man. And we're going to find out very shortly as we get into this book in the coming months that the people demand a king from Samuel, and they want it to be a king of their choosing. 1 Samuel 8 says this, "The people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, 'We will have a king over us, so that we also may be like all the other nations, that our king may judge us and go before us and fight our battles.'" So instead of God being the king, they wanted a king like everybody else. They wanted a king that would lead them in battle, a king that would really grant their needs and make them feel everything that they wanted to feel. And so God, through Samuel, kind of gives into this stubborn request and provides them the man Saul. Saul will prove to be a political success. He would lead them in battle. He would lead great political victories for them. But the problem was is that he morally and spiritually was an absolute failure. So was he a good leader? Well, it depends on what you mean by that. It depends on how you define success. And that question will be central to the next couple books that we go through here, 1 and 2 Samuel. But Samuel himself, who we're going to get into his story here shortly, he is going to be the final judge of Israel. He's going to be the ideal judge. We've just watched a string of judges who have all had their faults and failures and mishaps and mistakes through the book of Judges, but Samuel will actually be the ideal judge. From start to finish in his life, he will lead this unstable nation with a steady spiritual hand. At least he will do his very best to do so. And he's going to give them perspective from the Lord as they go about their way, fighting amongst themselves, fighting amongst other nations. Samuel will be there consistently speaking for God throughout all of it. And so we're going to get to his story here in 1 Samuel 1, but it really isn't so much about Samuel yet. It's really about his mother. She's really the central character of this story. But let's get into it here in verse 1. It says this, "Now there was a certain man of Ramathaim, Zophim, of the mountains of Ephraim, and his name was Elkanah, the son of Jehoram, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zuph, an Ephraimite. And he had two wives. The name of one was Hannah, the name of the other was Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children." We could quickly see here, coming off the book of Judges, that even this family, which is fairly godly, we'll find out, still has its wild issues. I mean, this guy had two wives. And as always, when we deviate from the plans that God has for it, whether it's in our marriage, in our family, in our jobs, there's going to be problems. And we're going to see this issue with polygamy in this marriage. It's just going to be more problems. Verse 4, And whenever the time came for Elkanah to make an offering, he would give portions to Peninnah, his wife, and to all her sons and daughters. But to Hannah, he would give a double portion, for he loved Hannah, although the Lord had closed her womb. And her rival also provoked her severely to make her miserable, because the Lord had closed her womb. So it was, year by year, when she went up to the house of the Lord, that she provoked her. Therefore she wept and did not eat. Now at this point in time, this is before the temple was built. I try to get a little context here. And so this place, Shiloh, was where they would go to worship. And they'd go up there every year in this case. And what they were offering in this case was, we believe, a peace offering. Typically, in offering this peace offering to the Lord, this would be a time of rejoicing, thankfulness, going up with a joyful heart before the Lord. But that's not what's happening with Hannah, is it? It says that year after year, she went up to make this offering with her family, and what was her disposition? Sadness. It wasn't rejoicing. She was very sad, and it tells us why, because she wanted a child so bad. And I want you to notice from the outset in the life of Hannah, who again is really going to be the focus here, how dedicated she is to the Lord. Is she sad? Yeah, absolutely. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But how dedicated is she? Year after year, she goes up to worship. And what is her experience in going every year? Sound like a lot of fun? Poked, ridiculed by this other wife, Peninnah, year after year. She's being poked and prodded and reviled, yet she continues to go up year after year in tears to go worship God. And I want you to notice that her attitude here is never one of bitterness or vengefulness, although we'd certainly understand that. We never see her retaliate. Sadness, yes. Sadness, yes, and there is a difference between the two. She is sad, she is with heavy heart, but she's not bitter towards those around her. There's a difference. I want you to also notice that although this Peninnah lady, she's not real nice, is she? She's not real nice, but she was at least apparently blessed. Whereas on the other hand, we've got Hannah, who appears to have a pretty solid spirit. No kids. How does that make sense? This whole confusing issue of blessing and God's work in a person's life is really central to this whole passage with the life of Hannah. Hannah wasn't given children, and I want you to notice why. The text goes out of its way to let us know two times in verse 5 and verse 6. It says, the Lord had closed her womb. In other words, this was the Lord's doing. He was behind her not having children. This was not some bodily mystery. This wasn't some personal flaw in her life. This wasn't because of something that she did. No, it was because the Lord had closed her womb. And so it was the Lord who had prevented her from having children. And if that's the truth, then it was only the Lord who was going to allow her to have children. Nothing else that she could do, whether some medical process she's going to go through or some magical or spiritual thing that she's going to try to pursue, didn't matter. If the Lord said no, it's not going to happen until the Lord says yes. Verse 8, then Elkanah, her husband, said to her, Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? And why is your heart grieved? Am I not better to you than 10 sons? I think this is funny. I mean, if you ever doubt the truthfulness of Scripture and how accurate this is to real life, I think we can pretty much imagine a guy saying this in some sitcom. Hey, I'm like 10 times better than anybody. Why are you weeping? And I don't know, maybe this is his poor attempt to cheer up or some kind of joke, or maybe he really did believe that he was all she truly needed. But in any case, this is fairly unhelpful to her situation. The Apostle Peter speaks to men saying, "You husbands must give honor to your wives. Treat your wife with understanding as you live together. She may be weaker than you are, but she is your equal partner in God's gift of new life. Treat her as you should, so your prayers will not be hindered." 1 Peter 3:7. Now, we don't get the sense that this Elkanah is a mean guy. We think he's fairly godly, although he's got some issues. But he's not trying to be very understanding here. He's not succeeding at that. He was rather mathematical in his approach rather than empathetic, which tends to be the case with men oftentimes when they give advice, it seems. "Hey, look at the facts, honey. There's no reason to be emotional about things." I don't think that's what she was looking for. And I think spouses can be a great blessing for the Lord, but this further sets up our story here, is that Elkanah is not going to be able to give Hannah what she wants, maybe even what she needs. Elkanah is going to be unable to resolve this problem in her life. Verse 9 says, "So Hannah arose after they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh. Now Eli the priest was sitting on the seat by the doorpost of the tabernacle of the Lord. And she was in bitterness of soul and prayed to the Lord and wept in anguish. And she made a vow and said, 'O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your maidservant and remember me, and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a male child, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall come upon his head.' And it happened as she continued praying before the Lord that Eli washed her mouth. Now Hannah spoke in her heart, only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Therefore Eli thought she was drunk. So Eli said to her, 'How long will you be drunk? Put away your wine from you.'" So we have Hannah here speaking to God. She's speaking and praying to him from her heart. And it says that she comes before the Lord, it says, with bitterness of soul and weeping and anguish. She's deeply troubled here. This is not some religious, trite dinnertime prayer. She's coming to the Lord in a very intense way. I think it's funny because sometimes it's these very same attitudes in our heart and our mind, bitterness in our soul, anguish, depressed feelings. It's funny because sometimes those same things tend to keep us away from God rather than seeking after him. I think Hannah's example here, although messy, is giving us a very good picture of how we should approach God. God can handle our emotions. He can handle our difficulties. He can handle our troubles. He's well aware of them already. Even this anguish, it says, that she has, he can handle that. He's well aware of it. And I think, again, we can call this prayer pretty messy, at least on the outside. But this, in fact, is exactly what God is looking for on the inside. Now, I don't want to provide some kind of license for not reining in our emotions or even our reverence before God. I think anything that leads us to dissension or sins among the church, we've got problems there. Ephesians 4:26 talks about our anger leading to sin. So I'm not giving license for emotions, but your intense emotions are going to drive you to do something in your life. But do they drive you to prayer? The intense emotions that you feel. Some of us Our emotions, perhaps our most intense emotions, are really best left to prayer before God, instead of being poured out to other people. I think she gives a really good example to this. Again, the Lord is aware of our inmost thoughts and also our inmost desires. Psalm 62:8 says, "Trust in him at all times, you people. Pour out your heart before him." Psalm 56:8, "You keep track of all my sorrows. You have collected all my tears in your bottle. You have recorded each one in your book." And of course, 1 Peter 5:7, "Give all your worries and cares to God because he cares for you." And so Hannah gives us this example of taking the weightiness of life to the Lord. Now Eli here, kind of the de facto minister, he's keeping watch over his ministry, but he fails to have good discernment. He judges on Hannah's outward appearance, concluding that she's drunk, and we can kind of laugh at this. But he believes that her reason there is not spiritual at all, but it's fleshly. That her participation in this prayer event is coming from the wrong motives. I think such a harsh and uninformed judgment is really unbecoming of one of God's leaders, really God's people in general, to make this kind of quick judgment on people. Later in this same book, the Lord is going to tell Samuel himself, "Do not look on his appearance or his physical stature, for the Lord does not see as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." 1 Samuel 16:7. And that's what the Lord was doing in this passage. He was seeing Hannah for who she was. Eli couldn't see it, but the Lord did. Eli's quick dismissal of something that was truly spiritual gives us a little insight into his family, and we find out why, perhaps. It says that later his sons were corrupt and they did not know the Lord. It wasn't very spiritually discerning. And so now, yet again, Hannah, don't miss this, is misunderstood by those around her. First her husband, now we could say maybe her spiritual leader even, misunderstands her. At this point in time, I think we could easily give Hannah a little slack if she was feeling a little misunderstood. Maybe taking a little bit of an attitude about that. Nobody understands me. But that's not what we see in her life. Verse 15. "And Hannah answered and said, 'No, my lord, I am a woman of sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor intoxicating drink,'" just to be clear, "'but have poured out my soul before the Lord. I do not consider you maidservant a wicked woman, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief I have spoken until now.'" So again, even though I think we could really easily see how Hannah would feel slighted or disrespected or overlooked or misunderstood, she doesn't do that. She doesn't even get mad or complain or assume that she's being oppressed. She explains herself. In fact, in this entire chapter, even though it appears that everybody is either passively or actively against Hannah, she never rebels. She never pushes back. No matter how distant or insensitive the people around her appear to be. Misunderstood by her husband, accused by drinking of her pastor, and maybe even feeling that she's been overlooked by the Lord. And of course, there was that oppression from the other wife, Peninnah. These are very real experiences for her, yet she does not retaliate. 1 Peter 2:23, speaking of Jesus, says he did not retaliate when he was insulted, nor threaten revenge when he suffered. He left his case in the hands of God, who always judges fairly. I think Hannah's true character was really shining through, not because things were going well, but because things were going not so well for her. We get to see her true character here. In these difficult situations, her character is shown out to be quite impressive. And you know what? In the difficult situations in our lives, our true character is going to be shown as well. Not necessarily when things are going well. And so the question for us will be, just like for Hannah, when everything seems to be against us, even those closest to us and those who should spiritually be leading us, maybe when we feel like we are getting the short end of the stick, what will be our attitude? Will we fall into bitterness, which is quite easy to do? Will we fall into anger? Will we become embittered by the offenses or even the perceived offenses of those around us? Colossians chapter 3, verse 12 and 13 says, "You must clothe yourselves with tender-hearted mercy, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Make allowance for each other's faults and forgive anyone who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others." I think we have a clue in Hannah's life as to how she's able to maintain such a good heart. And I think it's because we have a little insight into the content of her prayer, thankfully. If you look back at 15, it says that she poured out her soul before the Lord. Poured out her soul before the Lord. This was not just a mental experience for her. This was a true and deep time before the Lord. And you might ask, well, what was she pouring out? What was the condition of her soul? We actually know. In verse 10, it says she was in bitterness of soul. So what was she pouring out before the Lord from her soul? The bitterness that she had. The feeling that things are just not as they should be. Things are not going well for me. I'm in this position. And I want you to notice again that she doesn't pour this out before people. Her husband, her pastor, those around her, she's not pouring herself out to. And again, she stands as a true example of how to handle these issues in our life. And I think if we're able to do this, if we're able to pour out the deepest of ourselves before the Lord in prayer, this is really the basis of the change of heart that we need to start to have. This is where it begins. And how quickly do we often run to any of these other avenues before even going to the Lord? We're looking for complete and utter satisfaction in the relationships at this level, or maybe just looking it up on Google or anything else, instead of taking these things to the Lord. Well, Hannah does that. She goes to the Lord first. And in fact, some of her emotion is only reserved for her Lord. Some of it is only for the Lord. Verse 17, "Then Eli answered and said, 'Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant your petition which you have asked of him.' And she said, 'Let your maidservant find favor in your sight.' So the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad." So now Eli gets the correct picture of why Hannah was there. Sometimes it's really good to have a conversation instead of making assumptions. And in response, he gives Hannah a very encouraging blessing. "May the Lord grant your request." This is not a promise. And this is not some kind of prophetic thing that he's doing here, but nonetheless, it's very encouraging coming from one of God's representatives in her life. And now we're going to see this major shift in Hannah's disposition. Up until this point of prayer, everything we heard about Hannah was negative. Let me give you a recap. Verse 6, she was miserable. Verse 7, she wept and did not eat. Verse 8, her heart was grieved. Verse 10, she was in bitterness of soul. Verse 11, she had affliction. Verse 15, I am a woman of sorrowful spirit. But now suddenly there's a change. Verse 18, and she ate and her face was no longer sad. For the first time in years, her disposition was changed. Something had happened in that prayer. Something had happened in that encouragement now. And Hannah believes that God is able to change her situation. Hannah believes God. There was an inner transformation. Something happened while she prayed, pouring out her heart before God. And now her outward disposition is beginning to change. It says that she ate now. It says that her face was no longer sad. There's a change. I wonder if you can relate to some of these feelings that she had prior to this prayer. Grieved soul? Bitterness? Some level of difficulty, affliction in your life? Well, one way or the other, God has the answers to these things. And I don't know if it's going to play out like Hannah, but she does stand as the example. She doesn't try to find the answers in the things around her. She realizes that the only true answer is going to come from up here. And because she does, her life begins to change. She's taking things to the Lord. Verse 19 says, they rose early in the morning and worshipped before the Lord, and returned and came to the houses at Ramah. And Elkanah knew his wife, and the Lord remembered her. So it came to pass in the process of time that Hannah conceived and bore a son, and called his name Samuel, saying, because I have asked of him from the Lord. So before leaving, they worship together. This is both Elkanah and his wife. They're united on this. We get the sense Elkanah's aware of what's happening. And it seems that they go kind of in faithful response. They're worshiping together. They go home. Elkanah's relations with his wife, we assume this is done in faith as well. They're responding to what the Lord has initiated. And now God, in response of them walking in faith and response, God is going to do what only he can do. And it says here that the Lord remembered. The Lord remembered. This doesn't mean that God ever forgot. What this is referring to is that this now finally was the time that he was going to act. This is it. On God's clock, on his heavenly clock, this means this was the time that God was going to act. Obviously, this meant, yes, 9 months of waiting, but it's so much bigger than that. This was the due time for the life of Hannah. This is when God was going to step in and change everything for good. And so after years of waiting, years of weeping, really, years of difficulty, things are changing. It wasn't as if God suddenly changed his plan along the way. He knew exactly when this day was going to be, as far back as the beginning of time. But now is the time, and Hannah was finally aware that God was not just interested, but God was going to act in her life. This didn't happen because Hannah suddenly began to try harder. It's not why it happened. It didn't happen because suddenly Hannah just did everything perfectly right in her life. And sometimes we get the wrong idea about these things. Did Hannah have a part to play? Only to respond in faith. To respond in faith to what God is doing. It happened because God said it's time. The timing of God is something we have to understand. Jesus was well aware of the fact that he was never a victim of circumstance. Nothing in his life was random, but was all in the timing and will of God, both the blessings and the difficulties. He spoke of it often, John 2:4. He said to his mother, "My hour has not yet come." John 7:5, Jesus said to them, "My time has not yet come." And we're reminded in the book of Ecclesiastes that there's a time and there's a season for everything under the sun. God is in control of all moments of all time for all eternity. He's in control. And he has a plan. And he knows exactly when everything is going to happen. Song of Solomon 8:4 even speaks of waiting for the exact right time for romantic love. "I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, do not stir up nor awaken love until it pleases." And so it's one thing to be aware of God's leading, God's calling, God's desires for your life, and whether they align with your own desires, it's an important thing to establish, but also the timing of God is so critically important. And if Hannah would just have given up instead of going deeper with God in this issue, she would have missed it. Right before God wanted it to happen. In due time. Sometimes our expectation of when something should happen is purely based on when it happens for everybody else. I mean, Hannah was right there. She had this ever-present example of Peninnah in her life, who had plenty of children. And it would be very easy to look at her life and feel, "I'm behind in this game. I'm somehow deficient or problematic," or, but that wasn't the case. Not for Hannah, anyway. What was the cause of this delay in Hannah's life? We already talked about it. It said the Lord had prevented her. This was God's doing through and through. He was involved. Which meant that until God said yes, there was nothing that could be done to change that. The appointed time, the due date of whatever God's got for you cannot be moved. And so there's a critical question here now to ask, I think. Now that Hannah is getting what she always wanted, now that it's coming her way, what is she going to do with it? Now, she made this vow, and it seems like, hey, the ball's rolling now in the direction of her desires. What's she going to do with that? Because the story could stop here. She could just go ahead and keep Samuel. Thanks, Lord. Really appreciate that. What does she do? Verse 21. Now the man Elkanah and all his house went up to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and his vow. But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, "Not until the child is weaned, then I will take him, that he may appear before the Lord and remain there forever." So Elkanah, her husband, said to her, "Do what seems best to you. Wait until you have weaned him. Only let the Lord establish his word." Then the woman stayed and nursed her son until she had weaned him. Verse 24. Now when she had weaned him, she took him up with her with three bowls, one ephah of flour and a skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord in Shiloh. And the child was young. And they slaughtered a bull and brought the child to Eli. And she said, "O my Lord, as your soul lives, my Lord, I am the woman who stood by you here praying to the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord had granted my petition, which I asked of him. Therefore, I also have lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he shall be lent to the Lord." So they worshiped the Lord there. And so here's the answer. What is Hannah going to do once she gets that thing that she wanted so badly? She follows through on her vow. She's going to freely give back to God what God gave to her. That most precious thing in her life, Hannah is now going to give back to God. Now, was this hard? It probably goes without saying. I imagine so. I imagine this was deeply difficult, but it seems that Hannah is absolutely committed to keeping her vow. She, for one, is unlike the no doubt many, many failed rash promises that go up to God on a daily basis. God, if you do this for me, I will do this for you. I imagine that's on repeat, the prayers coming to heaven. But she actually follows through. She was more willing to dedicate her son Samuel to the Lord than to keep him for herself. The answer to her prayer, the greatest blessing that she received in her life, she was now going to dedicate to the Lord. She's going to give it back to the one who gave it to her. She didn't jealously keep it. She didn't look at Samuel as being her own. This passage actually is where one of the places we get the idea of dedicating children to the Lord. Now, baptism is a conscious choice of the individual and shouldn't be done without someone's participation or against their will. But dedication, at least how we view it, is a little different. It's a public event in which the parents symbolically give back to the Lord that which the Lord has given to them. It's not about the children so much as it's about the parents and their complete dedication to raise that child to serve the Lord. I think the statement is kind of like this. We need much more than the two of us to raise this child. We absolutely need God's help if we're going to pull this off. That's dedication. It's not magic, but it is a commitment. And here, the Lord does not ask for it explicitly, but it is done so willingly by the parents, by Hannah, by Elkanah here. He doesn't ask for it, but it does seem that the Lord is going to honor this dedication. And again, this is not a magic trick. This is not some spiritual blessing that we just sprinkle on the situation. Yet the Lord, oftentimes in Scripture, honors commitment and dedication made to him. Hannah here says, as long as he lives, he shall be lent to the Lord. And she is purely giving back to the Lord, which the Lord lent to her, I think, is her position on this. I remember once I had what I perceived as being kind of a troubling revelation from a mother I was talking to once. She said that her first son, when he was born, she said, that's yours, Lord. This one's for you. But her second son, she said, this one's for me. And we might laugh and think that's kind of funny, but that always troubled me. Are any of them really for us? I wonder if that's our thinking. Children may be a blessing, absolutely, certainly. The Bible seems to speak of that often, yet what a greater blessing children can be when they're dedicated to the Lord. That's what we're going to see in the life of Samuel anyway. Hannah is now leaving her son. He's about 3 or 4 years old. She's had time to get to know him, to love him. And yet it says in verse 28, while she leaves her son there at the feet of Eli, it says they worshiped there. They worshiped. Now again, if Hannah had kept that child for herself, would she have felt blessed? Oh, absolutely. She would have really enjoyed that experience. And there would have been blessing. Yet she had a greater desire than that. And that was to honor the Lord. And this is proved out not just by her words, which are so easy, but her actions. She didn't just say, hey, I'm raising the child for the Lord. She actually showed it. And this meant that there was a dramatic shift in the way that this home raised that child. And don't miss that there's an even greater result of all of this. This obviously is admirable on face value here, but what are the results? Because Hannah gave up Samuel to the Lord, it wasn't that just there was some blessing to go around. The entire nation was going to be blessed through his activities. And because Hannah gave up Samuel to the Lord, it also meant that her son Samuel was truly going to be blessed by the Lord and find his calling and his purpose in this life. And so this wasn't just all about Hannah. This was also about Samuel. This is also about all those whose lives he would impact and touch. So instead of being sad, they worship. They worship the Lord. Part of that worship is a heartfelt, prayerful response to God, and we can read this in the next chapter here. And we're going to see, we'll quickly read through this prayer that she gives. We're going to see that she's not at all focused on what she's losing. What she is focused on is the greatness of God, his holiness, God coming through for her in all of this. So let's just read this. Chapter 2, I'm just going to read the whole prayer here, starting in verse 1. I'm going to read from the NLT to keep this simple. Says this, then Hannah prayed, my heart rejoices in the Lord. The Lord has made me strong. Now I have an answer for my enemies. I rejoice because you rescued me. No one is holy like the Lord. There is none beside you. There is no rock like our God. Stop acting so proud and haughty. Don't speak with such arrogance. For the Lord is a God who knows what you have done. He will judge your actions. The bow of the mighty is now broken, and those who stumbled are now strong. Those who were well fed are now starving, and those who were starving are now full. The childless woman now has 7 children, and the woman with many children wastes away. The Lord gives both death and life. He brings some down to the grave, but raises others up. The Lord makes some poor and others rich. He brings some down and lifts others up. He lifts up the poor from the dust and the needy from the garbage dump and sets them among princes, placing them in seats of honor. For all the earth is the Lord's, and he has set the world in order. He will protect his faithful ones, but the wicked will soon disappear in darkness. No one will succeed by strength alone. Those who fight against the Lord will be shattered. He thunders against them from heaven. The Lord judges throughout the earth. He gives power to his king. He increases the strength of his anointed one. And we could certainly analyze and take a look at everything that is in this prayer, and it's certainly worth study. But again, I want to point out that Hannah is in no way sad about what she's doing. She's not sad about this. She fully believes she's doing the right thing and trusts that God is going to take care of it. And we read our last verse here. Verse 11 of chapter 2, it says, then Elkanah went to his house in Ramah, but the child ministered to the Lord before Eli the priest. And I think in this last verse, there's a very simple but easily overlooked lesson, and it's this. How old was Eli when he was left there? 3 or 4? Something like that, we think. Children could serve the Lord. They could be taught how to serve the Lord. Young guy here, but Eli is taking him under his wing and showing him. I don't know what he did. Carried around towels? Wiped the floor? I mean, doesn't really matter. He was being shown how to serve the Lord. It says that he ministered to the Lord. I'm sure that was quite simple at the beginning, but week upon week, month upon month, we know what Samuel became later. A great prophet for God. How did that start? Following around Eli at the age of 3, serving the Lord. Not just playing with Legos. That's fun too. But God wants to build something than a Lego set in your child's life. And it has to start early if he's going to do this. Now, in conclusion, just a couple things that we've pulled out of this text here that I'd like to just put in your minds to think about. I wonder if you have a deep desire for something in your life, like Hannah did. I think many people do. And you're wondering, is this me? Is this the Lord? Is this, you know, bad diet? What is this? Well, Hannah gives us a very good example of how to handle this in our life. Remember that even though her wrestling with this inner emotion, this desire she had to have a child, what did she continue to do year after year, even though it kind of was difficult? She kept showing up. She kept showing up. She kept putting herself out there. She didn't skip. She didn't let her emotions, we talked a lot about these, get the best of her. She didn't become embittered. She didn't start blaming people around her when things were challenging. She hung in there. Was it difficult for her? Absolutely. Do I doubt that this is the case for some people? I don't. But what will you do with that? She gives us a great example of devotion to the Lord. Now, what stands between you and the fulfillment of this desire? Let's just presume for a moment that your desire is within the will of God. That he does desire this thing for you. Because he did for Hannah. He did. Firstly, there's God's timing, and we spoke about this. There's really nothing you can do about that. We know that God knew exactly when the right time was for Hannah to have that child. And up until that point, he had closed her womb. There's nothing that could be said about that. And so you might be looking at this thing, well, I guess there's nothing I can really do. Or is there? Because there was a point in Hannah's life that it seemed that she did have a part to play. While she was waiting, it seemed that this breaking process that the Lord was allowing to play out in her life finally reached a head in that prayer that she had. And maybe that's exactly what he wanted all the way along, is her to reach this point in her life. I can't speak for God, but it seems that that was the time. This is when everything shifted. And what did Hannah do? She gave it all to God. She said, I want this thing, but I want you even more, so that if I get this thing, it's yours. It's yours. And so she poured out her soul. She poured out all of her desire before the Lord. She gave it all to him, even before she received it. And I think sometimes these things are probably best settled before you receive. And maybe that's why the Lord had it played out this way. So it was no longer a wrestling match when she did. She knew that when she received the answer, it was going to God. And so maybe I'll just simply leave it there. Have you come to that point in your life yet? That you know the greatest blessings that God has given you, or maybe will give you in the future, are they going back to Him, or are they for you? You put the label mine on those things, and you control them. Or are you giving them back to God? Because that's what He's looking for. That's what He's looking for in your entire life. Your spouse, your children, your job, your career, any little blessing on the side. Is that in a place where you can give it back to Him? Because you know that He's given it to you. Let's stand.